Good afternoon. We are the last, but the, not the least panel, talking about human capital over capital link forum. So let me introduce myself first before I introduce my panelists. I'm Terence Zhao from Singham Marine Services. We are a mining and training service provider based mainly in Shanghai and Singapore. Okay, please allow me to introduce my panel. Captain Ashish Madarita is the head of Korean AP Moller Maersk. Captain Shivas Cooper, general manager, Korean BW Hub there.
Good afternoon.
We have Mr. Andres Hajipojo. He's the chief commercial officer of Columbia Group and also the managing director of Columbia Cyprus. We have Captain Farid Khan. He's from MIC Marine, the head of HRC. Last but not the least, Mr. Marinus Kokonis, the managing director of One Care Solutions. So very happy to have you all with me today. Let's discuss some hot topics about our human elements. You know, in our industry, crewing issue are always one of the biggest challenges. Every ship owner, no matter how big the fleet you have, the first in your mind when you have your ships in place, you need to think about your crew. So globally speaking, we know they're always saying that in the market, there's always a shortage of seafarers, especially for officers. But we still can see ship owners, ship managers, they still have their ships operating with their crew. So how do you feel at the front line, at operational level? How do you think of the supply and demand? Is it really a shortage, or any type of vessel you think is shortage? So maybe share with each other about your fear. Maybe start from Andres. You are one of the biggest ship manager. So what do you think? Do you shortage of people or not?
Thank you, Terence. First of all, I have to say a very, very big thank you to all of you that you are here. It's the end of the day. We are all very tired, and we have all listened to a lot of people, and it's really great that you have managed to cope throughout the day. So thank you for listening to us. I hope it's going to be a very meaningful panel. Thank you, of course, to Capital Link, Nicholas, Annie, and the team. Terence, I think I'm not the, from the panel, I'm not the hardcore crewing guy. So I will look at it from a different direction in the sense that I have been in shipping for about 25 years. I think the first shipping event that I have attended, it was some 20 years ago. And people were talking about shortage of people, not enough people in the in shipping, and actually this is an ongoing issue that we are all facing throughout the years. And in my career at Columbia, I never really experienced the case that we don't have a seafarer and we cannot man the ships and the ships are remain unmanned. Of course, we have a lot of challenges. So, yes, there is typically a supply and demand imbalance in the sense that none of us, when it comes to hiring people, we have 10 people to select from and then you get one applicant. My daughter just applied now at university, after university, and She was one of the, I think, 250 candidates that applied for a specific job. In shipping, we know it's not like that. We know that seafaring is a very difficult profession, and people are hardly coming to the ships. So we have to make sure that we make these jobs attractive, and I think we will discuss about that as later. What is critical is always to be able to train the people and build them up to adopt to the latest technologies, like we will have the fuels, the new fuels in a couple of years. We have we had ECTIS before. We had to train everybody on ECTIS. Things are moving towards a direction that we always play a catch-up. This is the main issue that we're facing.
Okay, thank you, Andres. I think you are one of the biggest ship managers. I also hear the big ship owners. I don't think you have any headache about the demand side. You have any slots available, then a lot of candidates queuing for applying. But in general, in the market, we have many, we call it small and medium-sized ship owners. They are quite struggling. And you know, also, we can see the young generation, they may not like to choose to be a seafarer. And in many, many countries, seafaring is not really that attractive career. So that's why people always go to some developing countries or maybe underdeveloped countries looking for Korean. So, of course, we see the technology is another factor. You know, because automation, autonomous ships coming in, new technology, the number of the crew member required on board the ship is not as many as before. So maybe this is one of the factors to affect the seafarers' employment. So, Captain Ashish, so what do you think on this point?
Thanks, Terence. And first of all, it's a pleasure to be here. And again, thank you very much for staying for the later part. But I also know there's a cocktail after this, so that should inspire some of us to continue, right? I think for me, it's really important to understand the role of a seafarer. When we say 80% of the global trade or 70% by value is done by sea, that really gives the relevance of the seafarers, the role they play in the whole global trade. And I think a lot many people are missing out on that. And when we talk, the youngsters today are not willing to go out to sea because we also need to explain to them that there's a career beyond sea. It's not that everyone wants to become a captain or a chief engineer and sail for 30 years or 40 years. There are a lot many opportunities where you can move ashore, where you can be a superintendent in an office, work in some ship-owning company, ship management, or flag state, etc., right? So there's a lot beyond just being at sea. And so far, I feel that we have not been very good at articulating to the youngsters what lies a career beyond sea. So whenever we say to an 18-year-old, you'll become a captain or a chief engineer, and then he or she thinks 30 years I got to be out on sea, but I think we need to start going beyond that. And over here in Maersk, we're actually doing that. When we go out to the colleges and schools, when we tell about the career, we do take some of our people who are moved ashore, and they're able to narrate their career from a cadetship to how they're sitting in the office and adding a lot of value. So I think for me, the shipping industry together needs to start articulating or explaining to the youngsters there's something beyond sea. But on the other hand, it's also, you know, a paradigm because we also find that on shore, people are without job. As you rightly said, Andreas, for one position, 250 people applied. And then we say in shipping, we will have a shortage. So I think we are really not capitalizing where some are without a job and we are running short of people. So we start to connect the dots better and again, start making sea as a lucrative career, not talk about various geopolitical things which will impact. I think they impact all of us at home also in the office, but also start to show what their contribution. If it's a decarb, I think shipping is on the forefront on that. That is where people will play a role in the future when they start to contribute towards how to bring the temperature down by 2 degrees. So I think we need to get better at showing the value a seafarer can add, just not from a trade perspective, but from a broader perspective.
Thank you, Ashish. So any specific type of vessels do you think is still some shortage, especially officers? I don't know, is Captain Farid, is it happening in your organization?
Yeah, I think the question about supply and demand, I think it's more of finding the right people for the right ship, the right skilled people. We run oil tankers and LNG vessels, and we also have a bunkering LNG bunkering vessel. I think that's an area that is, I think, the capability building has not been sufficient. So we are finding much more difficulty to actually build up that pool. It's a very focused, a very defined technology that needs to be built up. So we need to actually build up from the bottom. That is, and with the growth of the LNG fleet, for example, we need to be ready for that as we move forward. We find that if shipping companies plan ahead and build the capability right, we can then achieve what we want to achieve together.
Okay, great. So, of course, now we can see quantity is one thing, quality is another thing. So when we talk about shortage, maybe we are thinking about the skilled seafarers, the qualification and competency. But, you know, in our industry, we are facing so many challenges. Every year we have new regulations. Now we have a new energy, many things new. Seafarers actually need to be updated with all these kind of things. So then when we talk about qualification, we know we have this STCW, right? So STCW have been long time never been revised. So to what we can see at our operational level, so what do you think of STCW revision? Is it any specific area you think we need to do it? Because STCW, we know, is kind of a minimum requirement. So for the big company, of course, you have your own standard, your own metrics. So what about this point in BW Havnia, Captain Shivas, anything you want to share with us?
Well, yeah, that's a good question because this topic is always being asked, you know, in almost all the conferences that I attend on the global level, you know, what we should look at in STCW when we come to revising it. Of course, STCW has always been very instrumental in defining the minimum qualification standards of seafarer. But now it's high time with the technology coming into place, the environmental compliance, the digitalization, that we look at revising some of the aspects of STCW. So what we feel as ship owner, you know, who's trying to, you know, look at alternative fuels, buying new technology, we need to ensure that, you know, our seafarers, our future generation, and also the existing old-timers, you know, they are sufficiently trained in these, trained to handle these modern vessels. So that is something STCW must bring in, the new revision. And I believe there are a lot of talks already going around that. So one is about, you know, the new technology. The other is also about the human factor. You know, that is something that we are discussing in this panel, the human factor. Of course, the crisis management has always been a part of the existing STCW, but how this human factor plays a role, you know, in this emergency management handling, that is something that new STCW must bring in. And it is also about diversity. A lot of companies, you know, even like ours, like Maersk, and I know quite a few who are looking at women seafarers. So there is something on that front also that needs to be a part of the new STCW, where, you know, we talk about cultures, different cultures, the leadership that we want from, you know, from our leaders on board to handle, you know, the various nationalities. That's extremely important.
Thank you, Shivas. So now, you in the big shipping companies, we all know you have your own criteria to select your seafarers. Like even you do the promotion on board the ship, then you need to give an evaluation. So I would like to know a little bit more about how you assess the competency of your crew in your fleet. Maybe Captain Ashish, you will share with us.
Yeah, sure, for sure. I think all companies do have an appraisal system, but probably that's also an area which needs to be relooked, right? Are we still working on an 18th century appraisal? And we are very objective-driven, all of us. Yes, there has to be technical knowledge, which people need to be proficient, to Shivas's point on handling emergencies. So when you know your stuff, you can handle emergencies. But I think also we need to be mindful of the young generation which is coming in today. They have a different requirement. They have a different approach towards things, right? Yeah. So how do our existing leaders or future leaders also start to understand how to deal with these? So there's the leadership approach change also required over there. The leadership qualities which worked 20 years back will not work today and for sure will not work 20 years later. So there's also a change in the leadership style which is required. And then we also see now we have vessels which are more diversified with different nationalities. There could be some where you have people from 7-8 countries. And again, some of the cultural things in one nationality could be ordinary, whereas in the others they could take it in a very different approach. So the people need to understand the cultural differences also and how they start to respect that. So it's just not where when we promote people look at the technical knowledge, but overall package, what we call is your leadership, how are you looking at the future, how are you strategic planning, how are you at contingency handling. And again, now a lot is being said about data, and ships also have a lot of data points. Is the master chief inner when they're going to take over able to read that? If you have to do an efficient voyage from A to B, are you able to read your data, establish the trends over there? Mm-hmm. So it's beyond technical knowledge what we are looking at for all of these promotions.
Yeah, I think this is more on above STCW requirement, which is more focused on the technical side. The soft skill, leadership, and management, other things, I think now is really it's kind of a reflection on the competency wise. Okay, so but even though now we have standardized international convention, we have we have our criteria, we have our definition on competency. But you look at the sea nowadays, there are still accidents happening, right? So our ships block the canal, hit the bridge. So people always come to us to blame our seafarers. You see, all this because of the you use the wrong people. So nowadays, do you think marine accident is still because of the human errors up to 80 to 85% for what we see in the past? So this still is a kind of a reflective circumstances now. So Andreas, what do you think?
I believe that the mentioned 80-85%, which is more or less a traditional way of describing and calculating the accidents at sea, it's up to each and every one of us to make sure that we prevent this to the greatest extent. Yes, training is important. We all recognize the need to train the people, and this includes online e-learning, but as well as the traditional classroom training. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all train our people on simulators and so on, so that the training needs to be and it is enhanced. Mm-hmm. What we also do, and I believe gradually we are all moving towards that direction, we are helping the people as much as possible, also using the technology to advance and to be closer to the ships. So today we know a lot more what's happening on board the ships rather than 3 years ago, and a lot more 10, 15 years ago. The connectivity is much, much better. There are tools which enable online even viewing of the ship. You have much enhanced training before the people go on board. We provide tools for optimization, not only speed and performance, but preventive maintenance, condition reporting, and so on. Therefore, what's really more important today is how do we help the crew, how do we lead the crew, we monitor the crew to avoid these mistakes.
Thank you, the
nature of the mistakes can also be much different than in the past.
Yeah.
Because if you have a seafarer or an officer who is not familiar with the specific ECTIS training on board, for whatever reason, then the damage that could happen after an accident is much, much more than perhaps what accident you would have a few years back.
Yeah. Okay, I think now we see the maybe people too rely on technology. Sometimes we ignore the importance of the people actually who should be keep for more training, make sure they know how to use the technology. Training is always important, also can be extremely important for us to keep our seafarers qualified and competent enough. So we talk about training. So I know a lot of communities don't hesitate to invest in training. So maybe Shivas, you like to share your practice in half year. What kind of training are you doing? Are you still rely on the classroom training, simulator training, or whatever training you have in place?
Well, yes, I can say that. So we do a lot of training as a ship owner, Hafnia as a ship owner, and we have about 120 product tankers, chemical tankers, vessels. So we spend a lot on training, value-added training, which are above STCW, which are like simulator-based trainings, you know, maker-specific training, you know, on the latest type of engines that are coming, the cargo pumps that are coming, you know, training on the soft skills, how to, as Ashish also mentioned, how do you conduct a performance appraisal, effective performance appraisal. So that is a training. We do 3-day training where we do a lot of role plays on how they should conduct, because we know this is one of the most important area when it comes to managing performance on the ships. And that is the biggest challenge today that we face. We don't know how to manage people. And there are a lot of companies who end up hiring and firing just because they can't manage. The same thing also happens in the office when we talk about superintendents dealing with the senior officers on the ship. Then we also spend on leadership trainings for our senior officers, and we continuously look at what can we do to improve, you know, the standard on board our ships, whether it is safety standard or leadership. We also do CBT training, but of course CBT trainings are not as effective. Of course, it's very convenient to do CBT training. It's scalable, but when it comes to the effectiveness, it is not that effective. So I would say that every company should look at a mix of CBT training along with simulator-based and, you know, typical classroom trainings. So all sorts of training overall.
Yeah, I think training is important, but you cannot only rely on one kind of training, right? So, Andres, you want to say something?
Yeah. I would like to add something, and I agree with what has been said. I believe the trick for the future is to unite the office with the ship. What we do at Columbia is fleet-wide and office-wide campaigns. So if it's a safety campaign, the office will know as well. We will do more drills in the office at the same time that we are expecting the ships to carry on more deals. We have established our eye care philosophy a few years back, and this is the same philosophy that has to govern our mentality. If you are an office employee or if you are an employee of a manning agent that works with us, likewise on board the ships. So it's the issue of distinguishing between the office employee and the seafarer is something from the past.
Okay.
What we need to look at is for the future, and the ships need to be under the human resource umbrella of the entire organization, and not to distinguish, because the seafarers on board the ships are equally important, if not more important, than the people in the office. So, and obviously the natural scenario is what has been mentioned earlier. The seafarers, eventually, a lot of them will come and work in the office, which is what we depend on as well. So it's uniting the ship and the office that's a key moving forward.
Okay, great. Marinus, regarding the training, we know one care solution, you are also doing something covering the training part. Maybe you can just introduce what kind of service you are providing to the industry.
Okay. I'm supporting two organizations, One Care Solutions and One Learn Global.
Get closer.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And we have a career development platform for the seafarers. On One Learn, and we are supporting them on, let's say, technical knowledge, but also on soft skills. We are looking at competency. Mm-hmm. We are looking at assessments and performance. Mm-hmm. And the way we look at things is that performance is beyond the individual. And in our opinion, it should be assessed as well at a team level, not only at an individual level, in the sense that when you're assessing an individual at a point of selection, let's say, mm-hmm. you're looking at qualifications, certificates, etc., personal assessment, mm-hmm. but when it goes on board and it steps on the gangway, then there is a different set of an environment, different culture, mm-hmm. and depending on the environment on board, his mm-hmm. performance will be influenced. Mm-hmm. So we are working towards, I would say, a program that will address a collective performance of a team as well in order to foster a better working culture on board. And that comes in addition, let's say, mm-hmm. To the other factors that we support through OneCare, mm-hmm. Which is the well-being factor and the social element mm-hmm. of, living and working on board.
Okay, great. So, if
we look at it on the needs of the industry and what was mentioned earlier, we agree STW requires revision. If we look at, let's say, the needs on alternative fuels and the training that is required to support the crew members, it's an endless chapter, starting from, let's say, safety protocols to technical knowledge to environmental impact to risk assessments to familiarizations, etc.
Mm. Yeah, the training is very costly. I think it's only the big company can invest on the training. I'm not very sure in the market, because now we can see more and more small ship owners. They may not afford to invest in too much on training. So is it any alternative way you think you can propose or suggest to those small and medium-sized ship owners to do something on training so as to improve the quality of the seafarers they are employed?
Allow me to say that I believe training and the health and well-being of the crew should not be seen as cost, but as an investment to start with. Even for smaller managers or smaller owners, there are solutions at different levels and offerings at modular levels, let's say, that they can select and pick up based on their budgets. but there are options.
If I could just add a point here, right? And I think you're right, training is investment, not a cost, right? And this over here, the local or the government should come in. How to have good training establishments where the seafarers come from, where you can actually help keep the cost down.
Yeah.
If you have to start flying people across the globe to do training, obviously for some it becomes cost prohibitive, but if we can have good training facilities across where the seafarers come from, you can really get the cost down, but focus on quality training. So the government needs to play a part along with the industry to ensure that we have qualified seafarers.
Yeah, I think every party must contribute. Yeah, be ship owner, manager, the government, also maybe the union, and they collect the fund from CBA or C. That man also is a very important part to contribute to the training. But anyway, training is a very big topic, so we can see more and more stakeholders in our industry realize the importance of the training, especially nowadays. So if we come to another question, is about recruitment and retention. So not every company have a scheme to train their people by taking in cadets from day one. Many of them actually they go to the market, to go to the open market to recruit the seafarers they need. That's why we see now we have an open market for seafarers in many countries like the Philippines, India, China. So we have many seafarers available in the market. They may not permanently belong to any employer. They complete one contract, then they become a free list. So that's why we see recruitment become so popular for many ship owners, because they also don't know, today I have 10 ships, maybe tomorrow I have only 5 ships left. I cannot employ those seafarers for long run. And also for ship owners, they have new buildings, ship, they buy second-hand ships. So today they buy, tomorrow they need the seafarers immediately available. So all these kind of things, now in the open market, recruitment become a big challenge for many of us. So in terms of the industrial practice in recruitment and retention, so is there any experience you'd like to share with us? Maybe Farid, is it in your MRC, what is your practice?
I think we've always believed in building our own capability. But saying that, there is a need when you have a sudden growth to recruit from the market. And I think the key is to make sure that you don't have a quality leak when you do that. You make sure that the team that you recruit, the team that is actually going through the criteria for recruitment, and make sure that the people that you're bringing in is right fit for the company as well as for the culture. I really like what Marino said about it's not about the individual but the team. But I think we should also bring it to the next level. It's also the shore team and the culture of the company. Because if you get that right, then everything that will prevent a quality leak will be stopped. I still believe that companies that invest in building their own capability right from the bottom will be successful, because without that you can't actually have a rotating pool that works. In the old days we used to have 6-month contracts with 2 months leave. You have now 3-month contract or 2-month contract, so you actually need at the senior officer level double the number of people. So the capability building and the recruitment continues, and it's a cycle that the whole industry goes through. And how do we actually get this right? I think that is the key. Okay. So to have a strategy that you plan your growth and you plan your technology advances, ships with ammonia, methanol, even the regulators have not defined the training in the right way. and standardize it. So companies that needs to move forward need to understand this, take this as a challenge, a management of change, and address the issues at the base level to move forward.
Okay. What about Musk, Ashish?
Yeah, for us, we have a very strong cadet program, and we believe in in-house development. So we got cadets, they go up the rank, and traditionally we never hired senior officers. But exactly to Captain Farid's point is, you know, we want to have people with our own culture right when they're 18-year-old. So we're really able to imbibe it at them. And retention is important, but once you have these people coming in who have seen the company, who stand by the values, who see how you're treated throughout your career, time of crisis, if it was COVID or the other geopolitical issues, I think that's where the differentiation starts to happen, where people start to believe in you, right? I'm sure there are a few seafarers who would run for a few dollar or so, but many would want a stability or a company which stand by its values and with all what is happening nowadays are there to support you, right? So I think it's a larger scheme, you know, how to retain than just look at small things, right? So where does the employee value proposition come for someone to continue sailing with you? And how do you, in fact, now, I would say it extends beyond the seafarer to the families. What are you doing for the families? Are you having some medical benefit? Are you educating them on health issues? Are you really supporting them, engaging them, involving them to be part of the larger organization? So it's just not the seafarers. At least I believe it's the families also which start to play a role in a seafarer career in a company.
Mm-hmm. Great. So nowadays, more and more companies now they start employing female seafarers. So what do you think, Shivas, in half year, do you have such kind of practice? What do you think, what will be the future?
Yeah. Well, we spoke about the demand and supply, the shortfall, right? And we also spoke about the geoeconomic situations. We had COVID, we have an unfortunate war situation going on, you know? So you can't basically rely on the traditional source of crew nationalities that we have employed in the past so many years, right? So we need to be ready to go out and look at, you know, other nationalities. We have to look at female seafarers, right? We have to be nationality blind. We have to be gender blind. And that is when we will be able to source the required amount of seafarers that is needed in the years to come. If we don't do that, then it's going to be a huge problem. Of course, the big ship owners will still be able to find crew because maybe their salaries are good, they have good social benefits, but what about the shipping industry in general? So it's an industry-wide problem, and all shipping companies together with the help of government organization and the unions have to come together and promote, you know, also female seafarers. So we as a company have done quite a bit in that area. We have looked at, you know, increasing the infrastructure or improving the infrastructure on board so that the female seafarers, they feel welcome when they join us, you know. So we looked at upgrading medicine chest. We looked at sending minimum 2 female seafarers. We looked at their PPE, you know. We gathered some feedback from the pool of women we have, like what do they want, you know, what all things would they like to have in terms of the PPE, the personal protective equipment that they have. So they mentioned that they feel that we should be having short and trouser type boiler suits, for example. And these small steps we have taken, and today we can say we have more than, say, 500 women seafarers in the fleet of 120 ships that we have, and we have all tanker ships. So in addition to these things, we also looked at gender-neutral policies, you know. I'm also sitting in IMEC board. We are looking at discussing gender-neutral ranks with the unions, right? So today, a female would not like to come if there's a position of mess man. So we are looking at a position of catering assistant. So these are the few steps we as a company are taking, and we believe that industry will follow the same because that is the only way out. We have to go out there and give chance to the deserving, you know, candidates, whether they are men or women, or whether they are from other nationalities.
Yeah, thank you, Shivas. I think it's very important for the industry. now you cannot just find your several sources only for one gender, right? So female cadets, female officers, we have seen more and more on board the ship of many big organizations. So the last one, let's discuss about the seafarers welfare and health care. We know this is a very difficult job, seafarers. So normally the salary we pay, we have a ILO minimum standard. We also have various CBAs. So nowadays, compared with the contribution of seafarers to our industry, so do you think they are well paid if you just in compliance with various CBAs? What is your practice, your organization? So Ashish, what is your practice in Maersk for the crew salary and the benefit?
I think for us is beyond salary, right? Because salary is one factor to it, but more important is that the seafarer, does he or she feel respected where they're sailing? Do they feel looked after? Do they feel that when there is a need, they are in dire straits, the company is there to support them? And how can they build a career where in today's world not asked to do anything wrong? I think seafarers are looking beyond just the dollar value, but more from a broader perspective. Do they really feel committed to it? Do they buy in to the what the company wants to deliver, what they want to do in the environmental fund or what they want to do in the CSR? So a lot of seafarers are involved over there. So I think we are going much beyond just in the salary. People are wanting to be part of an organization where they can actually go and stand up and say, I work for Maersk or somewhere else, and this is where the company stands for. And the younger generation, if you see, are really on, they want things which are environment, you know, CO2 neutral and all these things. So this is where we need to start to adapt and get people to focus on that. So it's beyond salary, at least in my books.
Yeah, it's a package of composition. Yeah. What about the Hafnir?
Well, when you talk about salaries, as Ashish correctly mentioned, if you look at even the research, you look at Drury, they say that, you know, there's going to be a huge shortage, as we already discussed. And nowadays, seafarers are looking beyond salaries. What they are looking at is, you know, whether the companies have good internet on the ship, you know. And there are things like what we see in Hafnia. If you relieve them on time, these small things, that is what really matters, you know. Relieving them on time, having good social benefits, of course, having good and competitive salaries as well does help, but it is not only the salaries part. And there are a lot of factors that, of course, affect the salary levels, right, depending on if you are looking after an LNG fleet, which is more niche, or LNG fuel vessels, or a specialized trade where you need to drive up wages, or suddenly there's a shortage of a particular rank, you know, in the market where you need to drive up. Other than that, wages does not play that important role today.
Yeah, great. So, you know, seafarers, the working on board the ship, of course, they need a pay, a nice pay to feed the family. And also, we know this very challenging job because of the nature of their very demanding nature of the work. The always long period, far away from their family, home. Nowadays, especially during COVID and after, we see more and more cases, the mental issues of seafarers becoming more serious. So for us, at least, is there anything we can do for age? Farid, is there any... I remember one year you see is you must make sure your people are happy, right? You have happy people on board, then you will have a safe ship. So what do you think in MRC, what is your practice to help the crew manage their health?
Yeah, I fully agree with Ashish and Shivasa. I think it's not just the basic salary. It's about the whole terms and condition and benefits and a holistic, safe and pleasant environment to work, living conditions as well as working conditions. I think the younger generation is also looking at maybe a customized terms and conditions rather than the standard. This is the insurance for the family and everybody gets the same. I think the new generation is looking at how we can actually do this in a different way. Providing a caring working environment, I think, is critical. That keeps coming up as we move forward. Shorter contracts, better communication, the basic things that we take for granted ashore, I think that is being demanded at sea. And if we don't keep up with that, I think we will lose more and more people. I think it's about going back to basics. What you would do for your family and your children, I think we need to do for our seafarers at sea. I think if we go back to down to that basic level, I think we'll be successful.
Yeah, of course, I'm happy to see you, the big ship owners, big ship managers, are doing so well. But in the industry, we still can see a lot of mental health problems happening every day. The worst case, some of the crew, they may feel social isolation, so even close to themselves, we are seeing more and more suicide cases. Mariners, what do you think, how we can, as an industry, joint effort, how can we manage seafarers' mental issues, help them?
There are many cases, unfortunately, not only on board, but also shoreside from the crew while on their vacation. We've seen not only the trends from COVID, but also the effects from the Ukraine war. There is
and
a huge...
another Red Sea problem.
Huh?
The Red Sea problem
yeah,
now.
Yeah, the Red Sea problem now, yes, indeed.
Piracy, yeah.
And if we take, for example, the situation in Ukraine and Russia over there, there is a lot of post-traumatic stress as well to the families, which is affecting, obviously, the seafarers while they are on board. We have taken some steps with our, let's say, group company, Mental Health Support Solutions, and we are building now a rehab center in Germany just for this purpose. It's going to be a non-for-profit organization to support the seafarers in need, regardless of nationality or company. So it's going to be open to all seafarers and their families. And but we do see the need on a daily basis.
Okay, great. Anything you want to see? Address?
I would like to add on the topic of mental health that we're a big supporters of providing mental health support to the seafarers as well as the shore employees. I think we were probably the first ones that they brought the mental health into the shipping quite a number of years ago, and subsequently we had COVID, we had the war, and so on. We support greatly the we use the services of Marinos Kokkinis company, and we are supporting in the steps taken to take care of the seafarers. And what has been mentioned about the trauma center in Germany, this is an example. How do you actually, by taking care of the seafarers and their families that they have post-war trauma issues, you basically show that you are a live organization and you keep the people with you because you support them during the bad times, then they will stay with you and they will work with you in the future. So this is, I think, an initiative we need to support as an industry. But in general, as organizations, I think the challenge we all have is that seafaring is a profession which is based on short-term contracts, typically. The ship owners are not willing to commit typically long-term. There is a structural issue with regards to how do you actually connect the seafarer with the office and the shipping company. And I think what big organizations achieve better than other smaller organizations is that you bind the seafarer to come closer to the organization. They feel part of the team. They feel part of a bigger organization, and we have to remain positive. We have to explore and communicate the benefits of the seafaring profession. And collectively as an industry, we have a common target, which is to raise the level through, not only just through STCW, but by taking collective measures for the improvement of the industry.
Okay, thank you. Okay, time's up. We know our CPRS is very critical to ensure our ship's safety and also the efficient operation. So I think the industry gradually realized the importance to take care of their people, especially the seafarers, the frontline staff. Okay, I would like to thank you very much to all our panelists, your insights and your sharing with us. I hope we have some takeaways. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.